Before I begin, I'm going to warn you that there will be spoilers. If you haven't seen 1993's Doppelganger, I recommend that you do so and come back. It is available to stream, and if nothing else, it's an interesting watch. Yeah, we're going with interesting. Welcome, listeners, to another episode of the Bad Movie Bunny podcast, where horror and thrillers are reviewed, but is the next scream that you hear your own. My name is Lisa, or the Bad Movie Bunny, and today we will get a dose of Double Vision with Doppelganger, also known as Doppelganger: The Evil Within, directed and written by Avi Nesher, and starring Drew Barrymore and George Newbern, while we ask the burning question, is it evil twin or eviler twin? More evil? Either way, it was the one-armed man or the creep in the alley. It is almost always the creep in the alley. Let's get into it. Holly Gooding, played by Drew Barrymore, moves from New York City to Los Angeles and rents a room from a writer named Patrick Highsmith, played by George Newbern. While he notices that there's something off about Holly, he falls for her anyway, even though he finds out why she had to leave New York and what happened with her family, among other things. The logo for the ITC Entertainment Group could very well have been a dead giveaway of the made-for-TV feel of this film, which opens in New York City. Cue a rushed Holly with large sunglasses, covered hair, and a long coat. It could not have been more obvious that she was trying to run away from a follower. But it's New York City, and who was really going to notice? Except for her mother ranting on the phone about Holly getting all of the money from an estate before she gets stabbed repeatedly. But was it really Holly? There were other shots of her in different modes of dress or undress in a random guy's apartment. The movie then cuts to a plane bound for Los Angeles, with a fresh-faced and uncovered Holly in a taxi headed to the house of unassuming writer by the name of Patrick. Holly had answered his newspaper ad for a roommate, and after determining that his cat is mostly outdoors, and the shaking came from a truck and not an earthquake, she's more than happy to move in and help make salad. Her words, not mine, "I can't cook, but I can cut." And she does so with a large kitchen knife that will keep making cameo appearances throughout this movie. Pearls in bed, Holly experiences nightmares. At first, Patrick does not notice, sleeping on the couch in his living room. Wait a minute, was there only one bedroom and was that the one for rent? Okay. As a result, Patrick is less than 100% when meeting up with women writer friends who ask what this new roommate does. And after they determine that this wasn't a man who snores loudly, they ask Patrick if he's thinking with his crotch by taking in this strange woman without knowing who she is or what she does, beyond relegating him to the couch. He then sees Holly with the covered hair and glasses. But wait, she was asleep when he left for the cafe. It freaks his friends out. And this is though any and all weirdness would hit LA, particularly in writer circles, but a car moves and the figure with covered hair and glasses is gone. Patrick returns home to find Holly tidying up and on the phone. He asks why she didn't respond to him earlier when he called to her, but Holly had never left the house, and she's pretty upset when he tries to ask further. Upset enough to call a Dr. Heller in New York, as someone is still following her, and she doesn't know what this entity wants. Holly startles Patrick as he's typing away on a loud typewriter. After calming himself, Patrick tells her that he had won a national short story contest and just thought the hits would keep coming when he left for his hometown of St. Paul, Minnesota for Los Angeles. But he's having trouble with his screenplay, and is all too happy to drive Holly to her old family house. Now, whatever else it is she does, she is paying for roommate taxi service in the pre-Lyft era, and for long-distance phone calls to New York. Look, it was a different time for those old enough to remember. She heads over to a haunted it's just her creepy family home, after her handsy executor gives her the keys. Patrick points out a shadowy figure in the upstairs alcove. Holly wants to leave right away, no checking for caretakers, workers, salespeople, or squatters. She has to go, like right now. She's later haunted in the shower and seeing blood coming from the faucet and getting on the pearls she never seems to remove. Okay. Not that Patrick is going to think too much about it, as Holly praises him as both a good writer and an even better guy. When they return to the apartment later that day, she then seduces him. And the next day, she seems to have forgotten this encounter, freaking out when he talked about it, and when he tries to touch the music box that her father gave her. She then tells him she has a doppelganger, and that was who he saw at the cafe, and that was who slept with him. If he has any questions, he can call Dr. Heller. His degrees are from Yale. And it's back to the cafe, where Patrick asks his friend and writing partner about doppelgangers. The friend's response entails his being enamored of a roommate that she called, quote-unquote, a psycho slut. Then gives him a loose definition of ghostly counterparts, and directs him back to their writing and to a networking party. Now it's Patrick's turn for nightmares of Holly and the doppelganger. He wakes up to her holding the big kitchen knife that seems covered in blood. It's goopy, but it's jelly. She really likes that knife, it seems. She asks for more taxi-based favors, and then tags along with Patrick to this party. And it is a house party with some of the skeeziest hosts and horrible house music. Enter the dirty dancing and the quick change from Holly to the doppelganger. Remember, it's the doppelganger doing quote-unquote dirty stuff and not Holly. I'll note that the pearl stayed on. Now, I think at this point, the viewer can figure out that there is a bit of an issue that not even Holly's attractiveness can offset. Screaming mid-dirty dance will do it. Holly sees her stabbed mother and a partygoer wearing a similar outfit to her. It may have been time to leave anyway. You know, bad house music and all. Now, part of the reason Holly went out to LA was to see her brother Fred, who was in a psychiatric hospital after killing their father. The next day, as though everything was okay, Patrick takes Holly to visit Fred. She believes that while he argued with their father, he didn't push him out the window to his death. He was 11 at the time, but Mom didn't believe in the presence of a doppelganger that could have done the deed. Fred has been catatonic and less than chatty ever since. Weird enough, but Patrick is later tricked into heading to an empty apartment to be railroaded by a slap-happy, that's a slap-happy, not punch-happy, quote-unquote FBI agent looking for Holly, as she is the prime suspect in her mother's murder and may also be after her brother to get the lion's share of her dad's fortune. This agent implies that Holly is sleeping with Patrick so that he'll cover for her. When eventually satisfied of Patrick's innocence, the agent advises him to get away from her. Patrick does not take this advice, even though she is holding up that big kitchen knife at dinner. It is a very handy utensil. Patrick probably should not have brought up the parents, but he did. Even after she talked about Dr. Heller some more, and mostly about seeing him while she was in New York, and the suspicion that she killed her mom. She then gets especially clingy and seduces him again when he realizes that maybe this agent was right and he might want to get out of the apartment. Holly watching him while he slept afterwards, while playing that music box, added a very creepy touch. Patrick doesn't see this and doesn't care. He's got a new love, and a bigwig at that horrible party took an interest in his screenplay, even though it didn't appear to be finished. All right, we're going with this. He's even okay with Patrick taking his woman writing partner to this big boys-only meeting that very evening. the same evening that Holly, I mean Doppelganger, I guess, decides to pay Fred a visit at the hotel. That big knife is making quite the star turn. Well, it's making more appearances than that bigwig as he stood up Patrick. He comes home to police sirens and cops arresting a screaming Holly for Fred's murder. She then dreams of her father trying to strangle her with a belt before waking up to Dr. Heller and the news that Fred was only injured. Sure, the case was only circumstantial, and she'll be out in a few days. She's out that night. Thanks, family money. Meanwhile, Patrick and his partner start to pack his things, only to find the real star of this movie in the form of that big knife covered in something red and goopy that wasn't jelly. Holly and Dr. Heller arrive to inform them that she's leaving for New York, but Holly isn't up for that. She argues with Heller that he isn't her father, and she isn't leaving Fred out here all alone when there's a doppelganger on the loose. Patrick hugs her, and they head out to crack the case the next day, and get followed by a van. And when Patrick drops Holly off at his partner's house, he goes and gets doppelganger info from a former nun-turned-phone sex operator. And it's LA. And doppelgangers might be the walking dead brought on by trauma. They're instinctual in nature, and perhaps love is what will reunite the haves. Okay, I guess in LA it can get weird and convoluted. Well, either way, Holly's with his partner, but he sees a doppelganger at the phone sex operator's, and I don't think she's looking for a second job. After chasing and later trying to confront the walking dead, no doppelganger, no spirit thing in need of a date and a big honking kitchen knife, Patrick then meets Holly's dad? For some reason, everyone is back at the apartment when the discussion of whether a dead man with a newly cleaned kitchen knife attacked Patrick in Skid Row. Holly gets a call from a woman, then drives off with Patrick in pursuit. Everybody makes their way to the decrepit family homestead, and a doppelganger fight ensues. Entering the house, the viewer sees a lot of masks to represent everyone from the dead father to the FBI agent to the killer turning out to be Dr. Heller, who is obsessed with Holly to a point that he will disguise himself as many doppelgangers or people or whatever it takes to kill anyone that gets in the way of him having her to himself, even if this meant having her permanently institutionalized and under his care. Okay, now this is a job for the review board, so to speak, but Heller is taken out by a traumatized and screaming Holly, twisting and writhing herself into a real monster. The haves are reunited as predicted. Love and trust fund conquer all. Or one hopes, as Patrick's screenwriter meeting went bust and the ensuing medical costs were probably through the roof, even for 1993. Did I mention that this was in LA? Okay. I guess this was an easier movie to review than to watch, but it wasn't all that bad. How about that big kitchen knife? You're the real MVP. I say this with my love of creature effects, and the Doppel monster was pretty good. The performances were solid overall, and as a bonus, there was an appearance by Danny Trejo as a creepy construction worker making lewd comments and gestures before getting kicked in the tenders by Barrymore and getting cursed out. It gave the viewer an indication that maybe the work of an evil twin wasn't necessarily at play. It was a small part to be sure, but a scene stealer nevertheless. The image of the pearls that Holly never wanted to remove reminds me of the story of the girl with the ribbon around her neck. She never allowed anyone to remove or touch it. She eventually does so, only to have the head fall off. Holly seemed to be the same way with the necklace and not allowing anyone to touch some of her things. Nevertheless, I can't say it was that good of a movie. I remember a thriller starring Barrymore around the same time called Poison Ivy. She's a good villainess, but it got formulaic toward the end. You knew Ivy's gaslighting campaign was going to be foiled. I got a little bit of that same feeling when I started watching this. It was a psychological, erotic thriller with a monster at the end. It might have worked better as a straight-up murder mystery, but there is nothing wrong with experimentation and definitely nothing wrong with creature effects. The film was shot in 30 days. I wonder how much time the doppelganger took. That said, this movie did get a little tropey. For example, we have one frustrated writer who is having problems writing a screenplay, even with a partner. And it looks like he gets a new jump start, or jump scare to that writing, when he falls for a pretty new tenant with a weird past. Or does he? As the writing seems to fall by the wayside, not even two-thirds of the way in. I couldn't help but notice that Patrick doesn't even notice the mess in the kitchen, or the wind blowing open with the strange noises during his first encounter with Holly. And you can't help but either laugh or bang your head on the keyboard when it all turns out to be just an obsessed psychiatrist doing all these things while gaslighting a vulnerable patient who probably thought at one point she was doing those terrible things. All this before the monster decides to make an appearance. The songs in that house party scene were nothing short of crap. The notable track called Kianga was written and produced by Patrick Seymour, who also wrote soundtrack notable Technogonger. Oh god, I can't even say these with a straight face. The overall score for the film was suitably atmospheric. It was composed by Jan A.P. Kaczmarek. He has written scores for more than 70 films, and won a National Board of Review Award for his work on Finding Neverland. And now to answer the burning question, was it the evil twin? Or the more evil twin. For this, it was random special effects and a giant kitchen knife with impeccable timing and a lot of goo. If a crazed and evil psychiatrist isn't readily available, I guess you could say it's the one-armed man. It worked in Twin Peaks and didn't even need out-of-the-blue monster effects. So, thus ends another episode of the Bad Movie Bunny podcast. If you'd like to find more content, you can visit my blog at www.badmoviebunnies.com or follow me on Twitch as Bad Movie Bunnies. Who knows, I may pop on for a video game live stream. Until then, thank you for listening, and tune in next time.